You're listening to Radio Golf Show.
Guten Abend, meine Damen und Herren. Frank Förster mit Radio Golf Show. This is a podcast in English, 100% English. And I greet you from the sweltering lowlands of northern Germany and welcome you to the 56th or 57th episode of Radio Golf Show. My co-host Mark is with us, as always, from the equally hot and sultry city of Stuttgart, I think. Hi, Mark. How's it going?
Good evening.
And I'm telling you, it's hot summer days like these that make me miss my years in the States and in the Middle East equally. Those were the kind of days where you just turn the AC up to 11. You know, it takes all night for the ice cubes in your transfusion to melt. We got no AC here, so no such temptation. As much as it is hot in Germany tonight, it's equally late for us, especially for us Champions Tour guys, Mark. But I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, you're in for a treat tonight. It's been almost a year since we've been, I don't know if courting is the right word, but it's almost to the point of nagging. We've been nagging our guest tonight, and the fact that he is here tonight proves that he's not only a master of his craft and his art, which is writing, but he's also one of the good guys. At the end, he just couldn't say no, and I'm personally very pleased to have him here tonight. He is a sports writer, golf writer for CBS. Screw that up right away. He is my favorite leading man on the First Cut podcast, without question. Mark, just because one of the other guys' name is Mark, he's picking Mark, I'm picking this guy. And I'm thrilled to introduce him to you all here in Germany. Meine Damen und Herren, please welcome the one and only Mr. Kyle Porter. Kyle, thank you very much for being here and taking the time to speak with us tonight.
Hello,
can you hear me?
Great.
Welcome, Kyle.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thanks for having me on today. I'm excited. I'm glad we're doing this in English and not German, because I think I might have struggled if we were doing it in all German.
You know, you're in Texas, right? We have a Texas guy on quite frequently, David Ogren, he's in New Braunfels. And of course, you know, he's like, New Braunfels, plus he's from Chicago and he wants to do it in German, but with him, we do it in English too. I know you're very busy, and again, I appreciate that you taking the time to talk with us. The headlines are just overflowing here, especially today again with what's going on with the 54 tour, we like to call it. whoever thought of that LIV, Roman numeral marketing ploys, you know, should get a raise. But professional marketers do sports washing well. The fusion between the PGA Tour and the what's now the DP Tour that just was announced, I guess, today with Keith Pelley. How do you guys see it in the States, and how do you see it in your profession? What's going on there?
Well, I think the PGA Tour, I still call it the European Tour, sort of alliance has been interesting because, you know, I thought what was announced this week was sort of the first time that the European Tour had come to the place where it acknowledged that it was a feeder tour, right? Because I think in the past, the European Tour had always rightly viewed itself as a destination tour for people that grew up and wanted to be like Seve or Colin Montgomery or Nick Faldo or whoever. And that's, I think, shifted in the last 15 years. Maybe that's because of Tiger. I don't really, maybe that's because it's easier to travel in general now than it ever has been before. But because that shifted, or when that shifted, I think the European Tour tried to kind of hang on to itself as a destination tour, and rightfully so, because it always had been. But this was the first time that I had really seen them acknowledge, like raise their hand and say, hey, the PGA Tour is actually the best tour you can play on, and we're going to feed guys into that, which I think is probably how things actually are or how they operate. But I think there's some sadness in there because the European Tour always had such a personality and such a distinct sort of vibe to it that I feel like is gone now that it's kind of been rolled into this being sort of underneath the PGA Tour.
It's on the same level as the Korn Ferry almost, you know, I mean,
yeah. It's a global, but probably slightly more talented Korn Ferry Tour. And right. I don't know. I mean, that's natural because you do want all the best players in the world playing on the same tour. And that happens to be the PGA Tour. But it feels like it's lost a little bit of its soul over the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, I think it's not only about soul. It's also about the money you can earn on the PGA Tour. I think that a lot of players are drawn to America because the chances are better, travel is better. And the money is a lot better than here in Europe. So, and basically what was happening there is now happening with the Leaf Tour, and people are just following the money it is the Leaf Tour, isn't it?
It is the Leaf Tour.
And people just seem to be following the money.
But I think what's sad about that is I love a lot of the events on the PGA Tour. I think a lot of them are really cool and interesting and go to fun courses, but man, the PGA Tour has started to do this, but to partner with the European Tour for the Scottish Open and hopefully in the future for the Irish Open, maybe those are like big important events, right? And you don't want to lose them. So I'm hopeful that they will continue in that direction, because I think that having that sort of global schedule, and Rory's talked about this a lot, but having that sort of global schedule is super compelling as a golf fan. Like I love watching golf when it's in Scotland or Ireland or Spain or, France or wherever. And I hope that the PGA Tour and European Tour continue to work together toward that, because I think that makes golf as a whole more interesting.
From your mouth to Pelly and Moynihan's ears, because I mean, the Canadian Open, I mean, these national tournaments, I think that's what you're referencing. I mean, you know, you have the French Open, the Italian Open. I mean, those are the biggest Rolex events on our tour here. We don't have a German Open because of some naming things, but many of our young people, many of our German golfers on the European Tour, when you ask them what their goal is, it's not being number one in the world. It's playing on the PGA Tour. So it's really interesting. We do want to get and talk about those important things about the Leaf Tour and what you know about it as one of the top journalists, because the headlines, like I said, just keep rolling in. But we do something that's called a quick nine, which is neither quick nor it's nine. But it's something that
I'll stop taking my text away. Shut up. All right. Sorry. Okay, Carl.
But fire away, Mr. Horner.
No, this is, where do I start now? Okay. Please. This is the quick nine. The quick nine are neither nine nor are they quick. They've never been. You just answer as fast as possible, as spontaneous as possible. If you don't want to answer because it's none of our business, just don't answer and say next question, okay? But there's nothing coming up that will astonish you. Very basic. So what's the most valuable golf tip you have ever been given?
Man, that's a tough. Yeah, it's not going to be quick. That's a very tough one. The most valuable, like as in playing or what or anything.
Anything, Carl. Just up to you how to answer.
I think enjoy the walk. And I think that's a very sort of cliche thing, but what I've come to appreciate about it is enjoying the landscape that all of these different tournaments takes place on. I was in Brookline a couple of weeks ago for the US Open and I'm going to St. Andrews for the Open Championship here in a couple of weeks. And the older I get, the more I appreciate the earth and the world and like the landscape that these events take place on. So I think just enjoying the walk, not even necessarily as somebody that's playing, but as somebody that just enjoys golf.
Yeah. I think that's a fantastic answer. I mean, you know, because here in Germany, a lot of, you know, and we're the biggest golf federation in Europe. We have, I don't know, 700, 800,000 players, whatever. And it's all about, oh, golf, you know, golf is fun. It's fun. It's fun. And it's so much more deeper. And I love that answer you just gave. It's fantastic. I keep cutting in. I'm sorry.
Shut up.
It can't be the quick nine if you keep cutting.
Yeah. It's like, should I start talking about, you know, please, like Walter Hagen said that you should never stop and
I keep forgetting you only
smell
has
the flowers
hour.
And all that. Okay.
Let's do it.
Fantasy football. Ooh. You can choose any player, dead or alive. Who would you like to play with? Why and where?
Oh, gosh. These are tough. dead or alive. I think... I think Rory.
Yeah.
I think Arnold Palmer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, do I choose four or do I just choose three to round out?
Three.
Yeah.
Okay.
The four.
Three. And I would choose, I'll go with Seve.
Oh. That's a nice fly. Oh,
I think that
that's a nice group. Yeah.
And I think I would play. I've never played in Scotland before. I'm hoping to play when I go for the Open Championship, but I would play. It's too cliche to say the old course. So I'll say Carnoustie. I've heard great things about
all
Carnoustie.
Right. Okay. When you're in Scotland, give me a call. I'll give you my number. I'll be there. I'm a member at Crail and in Panmure. It'd be a great pleasure to take you along if you.
Oh, that would be incredible. That would be amazing.
He's a terrible golfer, though, but he's a lot of fun.
It's always cutting in. I'm going to cut this out.
So. All right.
Okay. What would you be if you hadn't decided to write about golf as a profession?
Oh, I would be, I haven't thought about that very much. I love my job.
Did you always want to be a golf writer?
No, I didn't. I think I would like to run a bookstore. Like I would like to own a bookstore, like a local bookstore and just sell books and have coffee. And that's something that that's actually what I've kind of always wanted to do.
That's a wonderful answer. I think we've got a question for you later. Okay. What's the weakest part of your game?
when I get on the first tee, I think the weakest part of my game is probably actually getting off the tee. I've just been struggling. Like my iron play is pretty good. I have good speed around the greens, but I can't get off the tee right now. It's abysmal.
So you're all over the place. You're left, you're right.
Yes. I can't find a rhythm with my driver I can find a rhythm everywhere else except for there. So I just want to hit irons off the tee right now, but I don't even want to hit driver. I don't care if I have 240 in because at least I'm in the fairway, you know? So that's been frustrating.
All right. I can relate to that. That's something I've been fighting with for the last few years. We're going to have a lot of fun in Scotland. High grass are left and right.
90% of the courses in Germany, you don't need to hit a driver off the tee. You can.
Great.
Shut up, Longman. Who will win the most of the current top players? Who will win the most majors?
From now going forward, or just
from who now going forward?
From now going forward of the current top players, I think that Justin Thomas will win the most majors.
Wow. Interesting.
I like that one. I like that one. Great. Okay. This is one of our favorite questions. Hold tight. So you've just won your biggest event. You have just won your biggest event. Your mates take you to a karaoke bar to celebrate. What's the first song you'll be singing that night? And what's the last song you'll be singing before you leave?
I'm going to mute myself.
I don't know about the first song, but the last song, and I just went to Boston to Fenway for a Red Sox game. And they sing Sweet Caroline during the second.
Yes.
And so that would be the last one. I don't know what the first one would be, but that was one that was, I actually went with maybe somebody that you guys know, Jamie Weir of Sky Sports, who is based out of Europe. And that would be what I would shut it down with.
Well, if you open up with Sweet Caroline, you don't need to continue. Very good.
All right. This is a quick follow-up on the even quicker nine. Question 7, Lynx Golf or Parkland?
Oh, Lynx. No, it's not even close.
Ride or walk?
Walk, not close.
Carry or push trolley?
Push. I've been converted recently. I love push.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I don't like the name trolley.
You can call it a trundler, actually. The New Zealanders and the Australians call it a trundler. No, push car is like something you put a baby in, Frank.
My daughter calls it a stroller for your golf clubs, which is like a push cart,
you
put your kid in.
Okay, beer on the course or no beer on the course?
I like it afterward, not during.
All right, we're gonna get along. Music on the range?
Oh, yeah.
Classic or metal?
Classic.
All right. If you could play one more course for the rest of your life, what would it be?
How do I play it every day? How often
do
I play?
Yeah, you can play it for the rest of your life. I don't care when you die.
Winged Foot.
Ooh. That's cool. I know you just played. You recently played Augusta. No, I read something on.
I have. Yeah. Wingfoot is up there.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel as Augusta feels massive. It is massive, and Wingfoot feels more intimate, I would say. When not maybe for a tournament. I've never been there for a tournament. Because I didn't go during 2020, but just when you're playing around, I think Wingfoot feels the most intimate.
Right. Cool.
You can change one rule. Which one would it be?
Well, I think the first one that comes to mind is being able to pull your ball out of a divot in the middle of the fairway.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's probably others that I'm not thinking about, but that's the first one that comes to mind. That just seems so silly. Like it just seems against sort of the spirit of what the rule, like of the game.
And especially the divots on the courses where we play are not these beautiful divots. They're like ugly schnitzels, whatever they are, you know, like somebody was taking a shovel to it.
Do you sometimes dream of golf? If yes, are they good or bad dreams?
I do. I've actually been dreaming about golf a lot recently because of all the live golf stuff. It's all I've been thinking about and it seeps into my dreams at night. So I guess that would be bad more than good because that's not something that I want to be dreaming.
So do you have the swordy shark leeching behind you sort of? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, like the ship knock moment. But
Exactly.
Okay, we'll get back to that right away. I've got one more serious question. Why do you love this silly, stuffy old game?
I think that I think it's beautiful. You know, I think there is so much. Well, I think two things. It's beautiful for two reasons. I think there's so much creativity that can be found in the sport, whether it's a course design or players shaping shots, the way the ball bounces. I just think there's so much beauty in that creativity. And then I also think there's so much variance and beauty in, and I mentioned this earlier, but the landscape that you can go to play, yeah, whether it's, yeah, links or, you know, just fascinating courses here stateside. I love the beauty that both of those things offer.
Yeah, it's a bit like the opera of sports, isn't it? It's like it combines so many different forms of pleasure and different forms of art and creativity.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, last question. Live Tour or Nickelodeon Slime Cup?
Well, my kids are much more interested in the Slime Cup, so I'll have to go with that.
There you go.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, good
Thank
sport.
You very much. Yeah. There were some really nice answers.
Yeah, there were. And we've had everybody on the hot chair from Sessinghouse to you know who. But let's take the rest of the time we have quickly to turn back to what's really going on. And I think I described it in one of our talks, Mark, that we had as dangerous times for the game of golf. Maybe we'll hook in here quickly to get a couple of your thoughts, Kyle. It's a quote by Bobby Jones, and he said, "You may take it from me that there are two kinds of golf. There's golf and there's tournament golf, and they are not at all the same thing." Is the 54 Tour tournament golf?
That's a great question. I think it's an exhibition. So I would say no. And the reason that I think it's an exhibition is because what is happening at Live exists outside. So if you think that, and I think everybody thinks this, the four most important events in golf are the major championships. And your goal, just like it is in, let's say, soccer, is to get to the World Cup final, or basketball is to get to the NBA finals. You have to compete within those guardrails, that ecosystem, during the regular season. And right now, Live is outside of that ecosystem. They don't get OWGR points. There's no path to get to the Masters inside of Live Golf. And if that's true, then you can't call it, I mean, you can call it whatever you want. To me, it's not tournament golf. It's exhibition golf, because you're existing outside of the thing that matters most, which is getting to the PGA Championship, getting to the Open Championship, getting to the US Open. And so that is there's no threat. I don't mind the guaranteed money that players are getting. That happens in other sports. Mm-hmm. You know, like Messi gets $50 million a year from whoever. I don't even know who Messi plays for, but PSG. There you go. He still competes and he's still competitive, because if Messi doesn't play well, he gets replaced, right? Somebody replaces him on the team, right, if he doesn't play well. Right now, there's no threat of guys like Koepka and Bryson and Phil being replaced by anybody, because not everybody is in the same league. If there was the threat of that, then I think it would be a lot more competitive, and you could call, and you got OWGR points, and you could call it tournament golf. But what it is right now, I don't really think it is.
Does the 54 holes bother you as opposed to 72? Or
yeah, it bothers me more because I think 72 is such a good number.
I think so too.
But like, if you look at sort of how tournaments have played, there's a lot of things that people who started golf got wrong. I think that's one thing they nailed. Like, it's 72, it allows the best players to rise to the top, but it still gives you I've always thought about it like this. If you go play 10,000 holes, like let's say a tournament was 10,000 holes, there's only like three guys that are ever going to win. It's going to be Rory or JT or John Rahm. Those are the only three guys that can win. But if you play 72, those guys are most likely to win, but there's still an opportunity that you could sneak in as the 50th best player in the world and do just enough over 72 holes to win that tournament. So I love that number. And I don't think 54 is enough for kind of the cream to rise to the top.
I read somewhere that if the majors were 54 holes, Greg Norman would have won the Grand Slam because he led all four majors in
twice.
There you go. But one quick thing before Mark, you come back. You just said about about replacing, right? I mean, now we have Koepka and Bryson and Pat Perez joining the tour. One of the guys that's sitting on the sidelines this week is Pablo Larrazabal, who was one of our European stars, Ryder Cup destined, former Henry Cotton Award winner. What do you know happens to those people now? You know, if more and more stars join the Leave Tour, what happens to the guys that get kicked out at the bottom?
Yeah,
if you go back to the PGA Tour.
No, they can't. But I think there's a path. Or I believe there's sort of a feeder into the Asian tour because remember Live Golf Investments, which is the organization that's sort of in charge of this. They've invested, I can't remember $300 million into the Asian tour.
Right.
And so they have a sort of on-ramp from the Asian tour into Live Golf. So I presume it goes the other way. I think it goes both ways. Like you can kind of exit and enter from the Asian tour, which, you know, as somebody who's signing up for that, you kind of have to know, like, I guess my options, if I get booted out of Liv, is going to the Asian tour. Whether that's desirable, I don't know. Maybe it is, exactly. But I think that's sort of the, like the relegation, if you will.
Right.
Do you think with all these stars moving over to the Liv tour at the moment, there might be, you know, in foreseeable time, the situation where the major tours decide to embrace Liv in some sort of a way, you know, no regard from where the money's from, just, you know, try to get these people back into their arms?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if I had to bet right now, I think that the majors will, because the major championship organizations, along with the PGA Tour and European Tour, are broadly in charge of the official world golf rankings. And so they sort of vote on which leagues get world ranking points and which leagues don't. And if I had to bet right now, I think they're going to approve the application that Liv submitted for OWGR points. Now they might not, but I think they'll sort of look around and think like, man, this is not really our fight to fight. We have to protect our entities. We have to protect the Masters or the US Open or the PGA Championship. And, you know, good luck, PGA Tour. We hope the best for you. You know, I don't know that they want to get drawn into any kind of lawsuit or anything like that if they don't allow either players to play, like past champions to play in their events, or they don't give them OWGR points.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, this is the balance, I think. I mean, why would you get points for a 54-hole tournament and you get less for a 72-hole
event? Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things, obviously. I think one of the other things I wanted to ask you, Kyle, is about, well, number one, I think, Mark, you wanted to bring up the Shipnuck situation, how Kyle feels about that.
Oh yeah, that was something that I saw, and I'm an avid follower and reader of Shipnuck. I really like his style, and you know, of course, who doesn't? And seeing a journalist standing at a press conference from a golf player and being, you know, basically manhandled by two ruffians, whilst the Saudi shark stands in the background and sort of sniggers, was something that, at least for me as a writer, you know, and I'm not comparing myself to Shipnuck, but, you know, at least as a writer, I felt really uncomfortable seeing that. And it was like, okay, we are basically on Saudi territory. We are basically outside of what normal rules we would have, you know, communicating with each other.
Yeah.
How did you see that? You know,
yeah, it was hard because I wasn't there. I wish I would have been there. I think that would have been super interesting. But there is a sort of rules of engagement, maybe unwritten rules of engagement when you go to these events, when you go cover the US Open or the PGA Championship, and it feels like there are fewer rules when it comes to mm-hmm. LIV, which is, I guess, could be perceived as good, but it also might go poorly, like it did with what happened to Alan Shipnuck at Centurion. So I don't know. I think that remains to be seen. I've actually been, I guess, I don't know if impressed is the right word, maybe surprised that they've even been having press conferences, that they've mm-hmm. even been rolling players out there to talk. I don't know how much that benefits them right now, because players seem to be kind of stepping on what they're saying quite a bit. But I don't know. We'll see. I don't know how they're going to continue to handle that going forward, but I think it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
One thing that pisses me off is that all these guys get up there and say they want to grow the game. I mean, tell it like it is. I mean, and especially, for us here in Germany with Keimer, who is a superstar here. I mean, think about Bernhard. I mean, he's been on the show. He's phenomenal. I mean, I read he just missed the first cut ever on the Champions Tour after I don't know how many hundreds of events. I mean, it's an incredible, incredible thing. But to have Martin Keimer, who always was like this good guy sitting in the airport on the floor and all this stuff, come there and tell you he's growing the game, I just don't buy it. But I do wanted to ask you one more thing, Kyle, and it's, again, it involves the role of the media. I mean, we just had a situation at the women's PGA with Lexi Thompson, where mm-hmm. she unfortunately had another heartbreak loss, and she refused to talk to the media afterwards, and she got hammered on social media for that. I mean, it kind of reminded me of that tennis player. What was her name? Osaka. That situation.
Naomi Osaka. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, is the media a little bit too hard on these on these idols and stars? I mean, is that something that you guys? I don't even know what question I'm asking, but I think you know.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say I think the Keimer thing is disappointing, right? You were talking about him right before that. I think Keimer is one of the most fascinating people in golf, and he's always incredibly thoughtful about his answers and the way he says things, and just to me, one of the most interesting characters in the game. And to see him sort of reduced to these canned lines that everybody is just trotting around is
platitudes.
I think that's disappointing, mm-hmm. Especially because you expect it from some guys, right? And with some guys, you kind of say, oh, well, yeah, like, of course, that person is saying that. Keimer is not one of those people because I think he's thoughtful. I think he's interesting. So anyway, I wanted to kind of throw that out there. As for the Lexi Thompson thing, I don't know. It's really hard because as somebody who has empathy for other humans, I understand like not wanting to just get rolled out there and be asked 100 questions about your horrible putting stroke after losing a major championship. Mm-hmm. So I completely understand that. But as a journalist, as somebody who has to write a story, and as someone who you've interacted all week and there hasn't been a problem, and then all of a sudden you have this sort of I'll say this, I have a lot of respect for people like Tiger Woods or anybody like that. And Tiger's been like the ultimate example of it, who always shows up, never turns down media, always talks, no matter whether there's been heartbreak or an exhilarating win. I think that's a very, as a journalist, you have a lot of respect for that. I think Tiger gets sort of vilified for a lot of different things. He should get praised for that because it's not an easy thing to do. And I think it's impressive when on the men's or women's side, people do that.
Yeah. It's super interesting. I mean, and there's so many subjects with Mickelson and all these things. And Mark and I are just not together at the same time. We happen to be reading the Shipnuck book. We don't do that together.
maybe reading from Alan.
Yeah, seriously.
Good night.
Before I let Mark wrap this up, I have one more question. It's kind of a personal question for my personal benefit. I'm fortunate enough to, I lived in New York for a quarter of a century. And met a lot of musicians just because of New York. And I always asked them, you know, what's on their playlist? You know, what are they listening to? Now I have a writer right here. And, you know, I read Shipnuck and Bamberger and Rick Riley and sometimes even Mark Horner.
Oh, that was nice. That was that was definitely the only thing I heard, actually, because you were Ron. Thank you very much, Frank. I think I
got you're really good. What you were you're on the German side. You're super. Yeah,
thank you.
Who do you read?
Who do I read?
Yeah. I want the inside. I want like the Gene Clark, the founder of the Birds, that nobody listens to. You know, that has one of the best albums of all time. I want a name.
And I try to read a lot. I think that, and I've told him this, but I like to go back and read old game stories from Sports Illustrated. Mm. I think they're so good. Like somebody like Rick Riley gets piled on in the current era and, you know, has, I think in some ways become maybe like, he's just not what he used to be. But if you go back and read some of his stuff from the mid 90s or late 80s mm-hmm. or whatever, mm-hmm. it's unbelievable. It's so, so, so. And that's true of a lot of those old Sports Illustrated golf guys. I like to read Bamberger's old stuff, like when he was first, like kind of to the Linksland, that book that he wrote about caddying and traveling around in Scotland. It's incredible, and he's just so good at language plus reporting, marrying those two things. Some people are really good reporters, but they're not great writers. Mm-hmm. Some people are really good writers, but they're not very good reporters. I'm weaker in the reporting side, and he marries those two things so well, and it's so beautiful. I love reading his sort of early stuff. So I don't know. Those are kind of the two things that come to mind when I think about golf writing.
So it's like the old Beatles and the old Stones, not the current stuff.
Yeah. Super. And I mean, even like, so we're at the US Open 2 weeks ago at Brookline, and Jaime Diaz is there. And I think that, you know, a lot of people know Jaime Diaz as this guy that's on Golf Channel and is like a talking head and has interesting takes on there. Jaime Diaz is one of the all time great writers in this profession. And so to go back and read, you know, some of his early stuff and when he was like really in his prime in terms of writing, he obviously still is a big voice in golf, but I love that. I think that there is, and I probably should go back and read even older stuff than that, like going back to the 50s and 40s and 20s or whatever. But I love reading guys when they were first kind of coming up and trying to figure stuff out. And I think that's super interesting.
Great. Mark, you'll take us home. We'll let Mr. Porter enjoy the rest of his Wednesday afternoon. I know you have almost as many kids as I do, so I know you're busy.
Okay. Kyle, thank you very much for being with us. We do hope you'll find time to come back because there's so much more we would love to talk to you about. It was highly interesting talking about Leave Tour. And I especially liked your take on writing and writers. I must admit, I believe that To the Linksland is probably one of my favorite golf books I've ever read. And there are a few courses in there. I think my first golf trip to Scotland was like this this trip. We had the book in our pockets, and we sort of went to the places he played, and we went to Machahanish, and then we went on search. I don't know if you remember, there's this mythical 9-hole course he described somewhere up in the Glen. We actually found the place.
Unbelievable.
We found it. It was totally given up, but you could sort of still sense that there used to be a small golf course there. So we can delve on that. I'd be totally delighted to get you back. If you're in St. Andrews, you are in St. Andrews. If you want to play a round of golf, get in touch. I'd be delighted to take you at least to Panmure. I'm sure you know that Hogan played there quite a few times. They have a fantastic clubhouse there, and some really, really nice members. I'm sure you'll be very welcome there.
While I'll be in some village watching the European seniors.
I'll just wear a flashy shirt and you'll see me on telly.
There you go. I don't think, you know, Kyle doesn't know this because he's not very active on Facebook or on Instagram. He's basically, from what I understand, a Twitter guy.
Yeah.
But we do have something called the Golf Show Roto Fest, which is where we get together, everybody that's been on the show from the guys I've mentioned, and we try to pick the winners for the majors. You're too good for that. I don't know if we're going to have you.
I'm disallowed. I'm banned from the like the PGA Tour guys. I'm banned from the picks league.
Like taking Tiger out of the pool, you know, in the 2000, that kind of thing.
Oh, now Frank, you've made it really interesting. Now it'll be queuing up to come.
You're invited. I mean, it's always usually the guy that you know that shoots 100 that wins these things. Although I did pick Fitzpatrick for the US Open.
That's pretty good,
didn't I? Yes, I did.
You did, yes, you did.
Kyle, listen, thanks again. We really appreciate it. I hope you guys can hook up in St. Andrews, and I'm not jealous at all, because I know you guys have a lot to talk about as two writers, as my favorite German golf writer and my favorite English language writer. Well, I mean, from the guys that are still alive.
This is getting too good.
Yeah, it's getting too good. I hope you can do that. Give my best personally to the country I still love, where I spend a lot of time, where I have three kids. And we look forward to seeing you over here in Europe.
Thank you guys. I really appreciate it and would love to link up and maybe play some golf in Scotland.
That would be great.
Yeah. All right. What's our handle over in was guten Abend und viel Glück und gute Nacht.
Stay on the short stuff.
That's our sign. We're looking for a sign off. I don't really like it. I think our sign off should be
To the Linksland.
Here we go.
To the Linksland. Great. Bamberger will be after us. We're taking that one for free. Okay.
Have a good rest of the day.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Goodbye. Thanks.
Bye. Bye.